honor between the sexes. God created male and female in the Garden of Eden. They were perfectly matched, companionable, supplementing, complementing each other's talents. Each with his separate role, each with his personal talents and accomplishments, and in the husband and wife union to reflect the image of God. For when God wished to display his image, he made male and female. Each has his own peculiar role. Nowadays we hear talk about unisex. There is no question in the Bible that God intended each sex to play his peculiar role. And I think when the emotional overtones of this third quarter of the 20th century gets into its objective position, it will be seen again that there are peculiar roles that each of the sexes are to fulfill. In part number one, the Savior, who is the Creator, had a definite plan for the couples that he had made. Notice the words there that come from the inspired book. A man shall leave his father and mother. The highest authorities, the highest educators in his life so far have been dad and mom. When he gets married, he must leave them. There is a new set of relationships that he must establish. He must cleave to his wife. There is a general blending and holding together of purposes, mental, spiritual, religious, emotional, physical. They cleave to each other. This is a resolve that they make. Just as they resolve to leave their father and mother, their parents, the dominance that may have been in the home, and now join together in loyalty and union. And they shall be, this is a goal that takes some time to achieve, one flesh. And it's interesting to notice that couples that have been happily married together 40, 50, 60 years grow to look like brother and sister. There are some studies being carried out as to how this is accomplished in the physical union, sharing of hormones, etc. But the result of the sharing make them one flesh, one in appearance. They can tell after a little while exactly what the other is thinking. They can share as never before. And a dim illustration of the oneness of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. So God's original plan was one man, one woman, psychologically, physiologically, emotionally, religiously, blending together forever. Part number two, marriage. The union of a man and woman forever is called in the Bible marriage. God joins them together. He intended that this union should be a permanent one, that man and woman should make a definite, concerted, continuous effort to cleave one to another, to understand each other, to communicate with each other, to sympathize with each other, to weigh up the talents and gifts of each other, so that by compromise and blending and synthesizing, they could become one. But Satan, through the years, and we find the story right there in the fourth chapter of the book of Genesis, brings about, through envy, through jealousy, through covetousness, a breaking of the original marriage relationship. The pairs were evidently well balanced, and so in order to get an extra wife, the first bigamist killed the husband and took his wife. He made a song and dance about it, wrote a lyric about it, made a song out of it, so that his promiscuity might be rationalized and his own male ego increased. The Bible is perfectly consistent and is most emphatic that the breaking of the marriage vow should never take place. God wishes the husband and the wife to guard that union that they have voluntarily entered into and see that no one breaks into it. Adultery, the mixing, should never take place. Today we see, as in the days of Noah, that promiscuity is rampant. By every means at his disposal, Satan is using sex to destroy the family relationship, to multiply divorces and the breaking up of homes, to multiply fatherless, motherless children who have got to bring themselves up as best as they might. And so he produces decline, breakup of the family, decline, breakup of the national spirit, and his will and purpose are carried out. Part number 4, marriage with unbelievers. We should not be unequally yoked. Now this unequally yoked with unbelievers has to do not only with belief, but there are other factors too that should come into the unequally yoked. Temperamentally, educationally, of course religiously, perhaps even ethnically, culturally, problems arise. I have seen problems arise between members of different races. A German marries an English woman with entirely different backgrounds. These two try to make a go of things. Sometimes they succeed. Sometimes there are great difficulties. If we can get the same sort of cultural background, the same kind of education, the same kind of religion, these factors make it much easier to maintain a satisfactory, a growing, and a glowing marriage relationship. Now, should the believer deliberately choose to marry an unbeliever, the shadows will never be lifted from that family. So let us be careful, those of us who are contemplating marriage, that we allow no factor to be introduced that is a potential danger. We're all human, we're subject to weakness, we're capable of falling, there are going to be problems. But if we can avoid any by careful, prayerful thought before marriage, is the time to do it. Part number 5, divorce and remarriage. According to the scriptures, the possibility of remarriage is by the innocent party when adultery has occurred in a married relationship. There is also the possibility, according to the Apostle Paul, that when the brother or sister departs because of religious inhibitions, one becomes a Christian and the other does not, and he wants deliberately to go and marry somebody else, a brother or sister is not in bondage in such case. Today again we see marriage and remarriage on non-biblical grounds, and those of us who have to counsel the children, the husband and wife, the couples, realize that heartache, heartbreak are the products of this kind of fracture of the divine ideal. Part number 6, love in honor. You honor somebody by putting them on a higher plane. You respect them, you love them, you praise them, you exalt their position in honor, preferring one another. If the husband in love can work for the happiness of his wife, if the wife in love can work for the happiness of the husband, can do those things, each one for the other, that please the other, that build the other, then the mutual relationship will be very, very satisfactory. Each will be comfortable in the other's respect. Each will glow in the other's honor, and in return will return honor and love and respect. And thus the sexes in marriage will maintain the positions that God designed. Now we have stressed so far honor between the sexes in marriage. This honor between the sexes should extend also, of course, outside marriage. The free use of endearing expressions, the free handling of the opposite sex can only bring about problems. In honor, let us prefer one another. In love, let us maintain ideal relationships.